Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. Still a little bit croaky after the weekend, but what a weekend it was for British NFL fans. I'm joined, as ever, by Jeff Rimbold from Sky Sports from North America and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Jeff, what a weekend. What a game at Wembley Stadium.
Awesome. What an incredible environment and what a great game. What a, I mean, you could just feel the electricity through the television as you're watching that, you know, the last quarter of that game. What an up and down game, back and forth. And, you know, for Jacksonville, I just think that's such a tremendous, tremendous thing to get their first win in Wembley. And, you know, I think they did an awful lot to gain, you know, another group of fans in the UK.
Jeff, you're right to point out the atmosphere. Wembley Stadium was absolutely rocking. I was, and really the whole weekend, the fans came out in force and supported the NFL. We had the big NFL on Regent Street event for 6 hours on Saturday afternoon. Then I did about an hour outside at the tailgate. Hosted the coverage for Sky Sports from the sidelines for 4.5 hours and then dashed in a car back to the studios for the rest of the Sunday games. But Wembley Stadium was rocking, and it was a game that kind of sums up everything that you love about the NFL. There's momentum shifts. You know, it was 27 unanswered points for the Jags, 28 unanswered points for the Bills. And then you think, well, this young Jacksonville team, they've just taken a punch in the gut. They can't come back. And they did. And Jacksonville scored a touchdown based off of a corner blitz. And it's a team that doesn't blitz very much. We had EJ Manuel up and down. I mean, there were twists and turns all the way through this game. But that's not exclusive to this game. That's what the NFL is.
You know what? It was amazing. Even you watched the game last night that Arizona won, and you know, you watch it and you think, here we go now. Baltimore blocks a punt late, and then they get that last drive going, and you think, are they going to come back and win this game? Because Arizona had played so well, and you know, lo and behold, Joe Flacco, who has the lowest quarterback rating in the NFL when teams blitz him, gets blitzed and gets a ball picked, and that's the end of it. So it was great football all the way around all week long, and so many games like that, just back and forth, the Jets, the Patriots. I mean, it was really, really exciting football, and that's just typical for the National Football League.
Jeff, I was fortunate on Saturday morning to host a fan forum for an hour with the great Thurman Thomas, Tony Baselli, and Jim Kelly, and Jim Kelly is so full of energy, so full of life, so full of passion for the Bills and the NFL. It was a real treat to hear him tell some of his stories. And I guess you'll be, you've fought cancer and you know what that's like. Jim Kelly's been through that twice now. And to see him around the London event this past weekend was something pretty special for me.
You know, I followed that pretty closely because, you know, like you say, Jim and I are both guys that have fought that disease and won, it gives you a different appreciation for life. And he's always been a guy that loved life all the way back to his playing days. renowned for having fun, but his passion for that football team in Buffalo is, you know, really without bounds. He, you know, a friend of mine who coached down there said that every year at training camp, as they were getting into training camp, Jim would have the entire team and all the coaches and all their families out to his place and, you know, just put on a barbecue and just have a great day. And he just loved it. He loved knowing the players. He loved getting to know the coaches' families. He loved, you know, having his old team around. And Thurman, you know, Thurman's a restaurateur in Buffalo and very prominent in the community, too. It's amazing, you know, for a city like Buffalo that really is not what you would describe as a destination spot or a vacation spot. You know, there are tremendous amount of ex-Bills who have stayed and now are a part of that community. And that's one of the things I think the Bills do real well is they get those old players, you know, their ex-players involved. Steve Tasker, you know, was a great special teams player, still lives in Buffalo. And you know, a number of those guys are up there and making Buffalo their home.
Yeah, I was speaking to Scott Berchold, who's the PR director, longtime PR director of the Buffalo Bills. And he said that Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and him all live within a mile of each other, and they're all within a couple of miles of the team facility. So they've kind of stuck around. And those Bills fans, Jeff, they travel. Oh my goodness, they took over Regent Street on Saturday. It was like I was in Western New York.
You guys got a little taste of the Bills Mafia. Did you get any chicken wings? I heard they had the chicken wings out at the state at Wembley.
They had that. Well, we had a chicken wing eating competition up on stage at Regent Street on.
How'd you do, Neil?
I didn't do it. Thankfully, I was MC. I was the commentator. I had a nice clean shirt on. I didn't want to get dirty, but the fans had a good time with it, and we had team Thomas against team Kelly. It was a lot of fun. It was all. All good, positive stuff, and positive for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They got just their second win of the season, 34-31. So we're going to take some of your questions later on in the mailbag, although I printed them out and left them on my desk. So we started this podcast a little bit late because we forgot the time change, didn't we, Jeff? Not you. Me and Nick Pike forgot.
Well, I was feeling guilted here this morning. I was up here, walk out of the coffee shop at that 5:45, and I'm saying, okay, I better hustle and get to the office so I can talk to Neil and Nick. And then I'm sitting and just like, I felt like they forgot about me, man. We can't. What's going on? you forgot was the change of clock.
You felt like the New Orleans Saints forgotten, but you shouldn't be. So we'll look.
Whoa! Now easy, now don't go on those Saints.
That's what I mean. They're coming back.
See, right there. That's you got that. Anger, that latent anger, because they went into Indianapolis and they got after your boy a little bit, right?
Yes, they did. They got him, and they are back, I think, these Saints. So everyone was writing them off. But we'll look back at Week 7 and some of the big talking points. We'll make our picks for Week 8. So lots to get through here on Inside the Huddle today. And, Jeff, I want to start with the Dallas-New York Giants game, because we know we don't always go into every play of every game here on Inside the Huddle, but we like to dissect some of the talking points. And Greg Hardy had another outburst. So we saw Greg on the sidelines with Dez Bryant. They were going at it, but then emerged later that evening. That was what we saw on the TV. But then the All-22 footage comes out, and we see Greg Hardy shoving his way into the special teams huddle after the Cowboys had just given up a 100-yard kickoff return, which proved to be the game winner by Dwayne Harris. He gets into a shoving match with special teams coach Rich Bisaccia, and kind of try. They go back and forth at each other, and this is all part of Greg Hardy's play on the field is good, but there's lots of distractions with him. He missed a practice last week. Jerry Jones came out afterwards and said that's leadership. I'm not sure that's leadership. What are your thoughts on what Mr. Hardy's been up to?
I'm going to discount Jerry's statement, right? Yeah. Because I that's just damage control. I mean, that's just trying to spin a situation. What I was really interested in is the reaction of the players. You know, I'm talking about guys that have played the game, guys around the game, that because there's been an awful lot of talk about this, and it's almost unanimous. And it's interesting. The players are going to protect themselves. They're going to protect their own, right? So when a guy has an incident, they typically tend to be less than judgmental on that player.
Absolutely, that's
but
true. Yeah.
The reaction this time to Hardy's outburst has been almost unanimously, hey, they got to do something about this guy. He's completely, he's completely off the base here and out of bounds here. And, here's the reality. He put his hands on a coach.
That's my issue, Jeff. I want to ask you about that because I didn't play in the NFL, but I played at I played in the British League. I played for the British team, British national team. I know that transfers across any level of the sport. You never put your hand on a coach. And I've had coaches put their hands on me and grab me by the shirt and tell me what to do. And you take it and you do it. And I don't think that matters whether it's NFL, amateur football, college football, whatever the football is. I think he crossed the line there.
Well, I think here's the reality of the situation. Back in the day, back in the day when I played, it was not unusual for a coach to grab you by the face mask and jerk you to make his point, right? Well, that's all changed. You can't do that stuff anymore. And as a coach, you recognize the fact you never, ever put your hands on a player.
Yeah.
Never put your hands on a player. Well, that has to be reciprocated back. Now, if that was Rich going over and shoving Greg Hardy in the chest after Greg Hardy missed a sack, and you can bet this thing would be huge, right? Now, what I think is the most dysfunctional part of the whole deal is, as an organization, the Cowboys want to protect the guy, right? Where, you know, this is what you get when you take these kinds of guys. This stuff isn't new to him. He got fined when he was in Carolina for being late. He got suspended for part of a game for being late. He's had these issues all the way back to his career at Ole Miss. Mm. And yeah, you get a great player, but at what cost is that guy? And then you put him in a mix with Dez Bryant and, you know, the whole situation there, and it's just a cocktail that's not, you know, that's bound to you know, explode. And to me, it's really sad. It's sad. It's sad for the Cowboys, a proud organization, that, you know, America's team, the whole deal. And I watched Jason trying to, you know, manage the fallout from it. And, you know, his comments about, we talked to Greg about channeling his passion and, you know, But here's the reality. Grow up and, you know, there's certain things you don't do. And this guy has repeatedly gone over the top and out of bounds. And, you know, they get exactly what they deserve.
Jeff, I have a couple of thoughts on this. I think I get the argument about, well, you know, he helps us win, and therefore they're giving him a bit of a free pass, and I don't think that's right. It sends a bad message. And also, you can't have a bigger game than Greg Hardy had against the New England Patriots and Tom Brady. And do you know what? They still didn't win. So does he help you win that much? They lost that game. Now, he gives you tremendous pass rush, and you need that. But do you need all this other stuff that goes on with it? And I actually feel sorry for Jason Garrett, because I've met Jason Garrett a few times. You know, we've done a number of interviews now over the last couple of years. He invited me back out to training camp this year, even though the Cowboys weren't a team coming to Wembley, and he spent a lot of time with me for stuff we were doing for an educational website. So there's a good guy. You lived in the same neighborhood as him. You know him. You've known him way back from NFL Europe days. This is a really good guy with good values, and I think he's been put in a compromising position.
Well, this might be as tough a job as there is in the National Football League, coaching at that place. And again, like you say, I've known Jason since he was a college player at Princeton. He comes from a coaching family. His dad was the head coach at Columbia University. His dad then went on and coached in the NFL and was a scout in the NFL. He's got two brothers, you know, who both coached in pro football. His younger brother played for us in Las Vegas in the CFL. So I know the family extremely well. They're exceptional people, class people. They stand for all the right things. And it's really tough for me to watch him have to deal with all of this stuff that swirls around that team. And it's been that way since he took the job. I know there are only 32 of those jobs in the world, but that is a tough one, because you've got to deal with so many factors. And I think he's done a phenomenal job there. You know, this is really an interesting time. This week was an interesting time in the National Football League. You got another team in the same state, down in Houston, whose quarterback can't get to the team plane on time. You're going to be the starting quarterback, Ryan Mallett, and you miss the team flight. Now, what's really interesting in that dynamic down there is Bill O'Brien wants to cut him for missing the team. I mean, what kind of leadership does that show your football team?
But he can't at the moment.
You're the quarterback. You can't get to the plane on time.
Yeah.
I was caught in traffic.
How many people travel with an NFL team, Jeff? With probably 100, if you've got the players, coaches, equipment guys. What are you looking at? A traveling party of 100, and he's the only one that didn't make it?
It's between 75 and 100. He's the only one that doesn't make it. And it's a charter flight. It's not like you got to go stand in line for your ticket. And
right.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. And here again, you're a young guy who's trying to lead a football team. You're Bill O'Brien, who's trying to coach a football team and develop a culture in your tenure at Houston, and your starting quarterback misses the plane. Well, you want to cut him, and what happens is the general manager then comes in and says, no, you can't do that. So until there's accountability for these guys, until they're held accountable for their actions, they're going to continue to do these things. And again, Ryan Mallett's a guy with that kind of past, with those kinds of sleeping in or, you know, missing things.
Missed practice in training camp, didn't he, after he lost the starting job?
Yeah, again, what does that tell you about the guy? Well, you take those kind of guys, you're going to get everything that comes with them. And yes, he has a big arm. Yes, he has an awful lot of physical talent. Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady missing the plane?
No.
Russell Wilson missing the plane?
That's the difference, Jeff. That's the difference. It's not, is he Ryan Mallett or is he Ryan Leaf? I mean, it's all about that. There are players that have physical talent and off-the-charts physical ability that never make it. And I know in the studio, Kevin Cato always tells me off for, you know, I'd bang on about Jerry Rice running the hills of San Francisco and Walter Payton doing that for the Chicago Bears. But you know what? That's the guys that do that, the ones that, you know, Tom Brady's as hungry now as he was when he first started playing this sport, and he's won 4 Super Bowls. It is real. It does make a difference. If you have no, and that was the first thing Jim Kelly said, the first question I asked him at the fan forum on Saturday morning was, do you need intensity as well as skill to play in the NFL? And he said, you need a work ethic. If you have no work ethic, you have no chance.
And there's no question about that. And you look at guys that have succeeded at the highest of levels, and particularly at that quarterback position, there's a tremendous amount of things that you need. But, you know, you take Tom Brady, and if you just look at him as a physical specimen, he got drafted about in the right spot, you know, in the sixth round. He's not a dynamic athlete. He doesn't have a huge arm. He doesn't possess a lot of the, quote, physical qualities that you need. But what he has is an incredible competitiveness and a desire to be great and to do what it takes to be great. The film study, the work, the weight, the hours, and, you know, all of those things. You know, J.J. Watt is a phenomenal talent. He's a tremendous athlete. Mm. But the thing that separates him from all the other tremendous athletes, and there's every team has them. I'm talking about every team has them.
Yep.
Is those, that unquenchable burning desire that he has to be great. Those are the guys that, you know, are the ones that you build your football teams around. Not around guys that are going to miss airplanes, you know, shove coaches, get in trouble every month off the field. You know, it just seems like we lose sight of that. And that's the biggest challenge that we as coaches sometimes have with the people in the personnel office is they're numbers guys. They're about,
oh yeah,
how big is he? How fast is he? You know, that. But there's, when you're with them every day, there's so much more than that.
But Jeff, to those,
the good,
sorry, go on.
The good organizations, Neil, they understand that. They understand that.
Are they the players that frustrate you as coaches? Because I'm just going to give an example from this past weekend. I went to a couple of Buffalo's press conferences. I watched a couple of Buffalo's practices. EJ Manuel physically looks the part. He looks what you would want a starting quarterback in the NFL to be. He's big. He's got a strong arm. He can run. So you can't teach those parts. That's just nature. That's just, you are this big and you can become this strong. Obviously, you work at that physically. You work at that in the gym. But there's a certain limit you get to. Does it frustrate you then? Because I watched EJ staring down receivers. The first pick six to Telvin Smith, he looks that way the entire time. We've seen a number of stories talking about how EJ Manuel has trouble reading defenses. Is that not the part that you can control if you're a player? That's the part you can control. You go and learn that. You spend as many hours as you can. Would that not frustrate you as a coach?
Well, I think there's no question that that's a challenge, right? Because you see a guy that has all the physical gifts, but just it's more than just being gifted. But I this is certainly not to defend those kind of guys, but just to understand those kind of guys, and I think that's important. When you're a kid like that and you've been so gifted if you're gifted when you get to the NFL level that you're recognized as one of the rare ones, imagine what it was like when you were in high school and college, when developing your habits as a player, right? Well, you didn't have to do the work. You didn't have to do the study. You didn't have to make all the right reads because you could just physically overcome that, right?
Mm.
Now, it's the ones that have the ability and then combine that with the desire to be great. And I think the guy that I think now as I watch him is starting to get that is Cam Newton.
Yes.
Because here's another guy. If you've ever been next to Cam Newton, he is Superman. He looks like Superman. He is big. He's 6'5", 265-pound quarterback that can run probably 4'6".
Man's a defensive end.
Yeah, it's what he looks like when you see him come out on the field. I remember when I was in Houston and at a Texans game down on the field talking to Ron Rivera, and out he walked out of the tunnel, and I was like, holy God, that's a quarterback. And, you know, I've seen a lot of football players at that time, so it's hard to impress me. But I just was like, oh, my God. Well, I've seen EJ, and EJ's got that same kind of physical stature, but there's just a disconnect somewhere in there. Mm. And, you know, if you just put him in the testing and you put him through a workout, he's going to work out great for it. He's going to be a guy you're going to go, wow. If you ever get a chance, Google Tom Brady's body shot from the combine.
Oh, my goodness. Right? It looked like me.
And you look at that and you go, cut it out. We're not spending money on that guy. He looks like he should be.
Like he had a pocket full of staples and post-it notes where he's just come out of the office.
Oh man! All he needed was the horn-rimmed glasses.
Exactly.
Come on.
Actually, I don't walk around with a pocket full of post-it notes. I just clear that up. You know.
But the difference is you can't photograph. You can't. You know, there's no X-ray machine that's going to get inside their heads and their hearts and see just what they're willing to do and how competitive they are. That, you know, that's the thing that doesn't show up on, you know, combine testing.
That's a good place to move it into our next conversation, Jeff, because we'll stick kind of with the Houston Texans as well. The Miami Dolphins beat the Houston Texans 44-26. The Dolphins have won two in a row now with Dan Campbell as interim head coach. They rushed for over 230 yards, I think. Lamar Miller had 175. They were 41-0 up in this game. They had 275 yards of offense before the Texans got a single yard of offense. Ryan Tannehill sets an NFL record with 25 consecutive pass completions. But, Jeff, we talked in the past about how this game is about personnel and it's about players. Well, in the first four games, the Miami Dolphins have one sack. In the last two, they've had 10. I've just talked about how the rushing game has come into focus as well. Coaching does matter in the NFL, clearly here.
It always will.
Yeah.
But here's the thing to me that's the difference and what Dan Campbell's brought to that franchise is you see now, when we talked in the offseason and we, you know, did our tour of the NFL and all 32 teams and all that, we talked about how much better we anticipated Miami was going to be.
Talented.
And how, you know, they had talented players in there now. They'd done so much to improve that football team. And then they came out and just were a dud the first 3 weeks. And an enigma, really, because you looked at that defensive line and you go, how? And Olivier Vernon and you know, all of those guys that they got, Ndamukong Suh, and, you know, they got pass rushers on both edges. They got big guys inside the pushes. You look at them and say, man, this is going to be good football. And then they just nothing. Mm. Well, Campbell comes in and with the mindset that he's going to change the culture, change the toughness, turn them loose, you know, let them think, make them just play. And it's worked. For 2 weeks it's worked. And, you know, that's the effect that a coaching change can have on a team. I think this is going to be really interesting because what's the knock on from the Dolphins changing the head coach after three games and then all of a sudden they get this bump in their production and they start to play like they're capable of playing? Look out, Chuck Pagano. Look out, you know, guys around the league whose teams aren't playing well right now because owners, they want to win. And this has never been the way in the NFL. It's very, very rare in the NFL that coaches were fired in the middle of the season, historically.
Yeah.
Now it's becoming more and more the norm, and owners are getting more involved. And obviously, in Indianapolis, there are big concerns. There's big concerns for Ryan Grigson's job. There's big concerns for Chuck Pagano's job, and there's big concerns because the owner has what he feels is a franchise quarterback and expects to win multiple championships during that guy's time there. And it's not happening, and somebody's going to pay the price for that. It happened in Detroit.
Yeah.
Detroit, who can't, you know, isn't playing well. A playoff team last year not playing well. What did they do? They fire offensive coaches in the middle of the season and make those kind of changes. And when I heard Jim Caldwell speak, and he talked about, you know, these are tough decisions to make because there's families involved and all that, it's almost like he was trying to make him, you know, apologize for what he had done. Mm. I would guess that probably came from above him,
yeah.
Where someone above him said, "Jim, you got to make changes because you're not, you know, protecting the quarterback. Stafford's not playing well. We need the fan base to see that we're trying to do something." And so coaches get fired. That's really unusual in the NFL.
Yeah, and we used to have Black Monday immediately after the final regular season game. I think, Jeff, we're going to start to look at teams that are struggling. And the tipping point will be their bye week. So Joe Philbin got fired after Wembley because you have the bye week then to bring in an interim coach and give him a little bit time for the next game. So Chuck Pagano is on a seat that's getting absolutely volcanic at the moment because in the next couple of weeks, Indianapolis, they travel on Monday night to Carolina. After that, they play Denver at home. And then they play, well, then they're on a bye in week 10. So that's that tipping point. If they lose to Carolina and Denver, and then they're on a bye week, Chuck Pagano better watch out.
Well, I, you know, again, this is where it's so different, right? Now these owners that they have so much money. I mean, they have so much money that firing a guy, that's no big deal to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be when you were an owner who had another business and, you know, this was part of what you did, and you had a coach who, I would imagine Pagano's probably making $3 or $4 million a year. Well, he's in the last year of his contract, so it's not going to be a financial burden to fire him. And if you feel you've got a football team, and here again, this is a playoff team that went deep in the playoffs.
Hmm.
A year later, you know, they're not winning. Well, like you say, watch out because they're going to want to shake that up before it gets too late into the season and there's no chance. Because, again, they're looking at the effect that Campbell had in Miami, and don't think that they're not looking at their staff and going, okay, who would be the guy that could give us that Dan Campbell effect in Indianapolis if we decide to go that way and we continue to, you know, spiral out of control.
How do you survive a losing season, Jeff, as a head coach? Because it is a competitive league. You are not going to be in the playoffs every single year. I remember one time there was Bill Cowher, who'd been very successful with Pittsburgh. They had a really bad year, but the Steelers stuck with him and said, well, that happens every now and then. What's the key? Is it not losing the locker room? Is that what's happened to guys that get fired? Is it hard to survive a 4-12 season now in the NFL, or can it still be done?
It's harder and harder every year because, you know, the game is so much different now. Mm-hmm. The stuff surrounding the game is so much different. That's why I'm pulling so hard for Gus in Jacksonville and why I'm pulling for Mr. Khan. Because they have had tremendous patience.
Yeah.
They recognized when they went in there that it was broken and it needed to be fixed. And it's hard to quick fix in the National Football League, you know, with the way the draft is and all those things. You get opportunities, but it's, you know, this isn't basketball, right? Where you go get me a shooter and one guy that's, you know, got a thyroid problem and a 7 feet tall, you can win with those guys, right? And get two. Well, it's a, you know, 47 man roster. You got to have a lot of them, and it takes time to get a lot of them, and then, you know, all those things that go with it. So, you know, they're doing it the patient way. Now, at some point, you know, you got to deliver, and I think this was could be a turning point for that franchise.
Mm.
You know, you see the young quarterback make plays at the end to win the game. And now, can you grow from this? Can you build on this? Tom Coughlin in New York has survived some bad years.
Yeah.
Because he has, you know, the ownership is more solid, more less mercurial, where you're all over the place. And I mean, look at Washington. How many guys have we had seen come through Washington, you know, in the last 10 years? So, a lot of it depends on your organization. You know, Ron Rivera suffered through some tough times in Carolina and, you know, righted the ship. But more and more, it's hard to do because the pressure to win is so great now. The owners want to win right away, and you know, the fans always want to win. So, you know, you got to be in a position where you're in an organization that believes in what you're doing, and you keep your, like you say, Neil, you keep your locker room. That's really important that you keep your team. And that comes from, in my opinion, that comes from being honest with them from the day you walk in the building and, you know, treating them with respect and creating a workplace environment where they, you know, where they want to come to work every day, regardless whether you win or lose.
Yeah, I think even those coaches that are given time, Jeff, feel the pressure. I was around Gus Bradley. I've been around him a lot in recent years. I felt that there was he was on edge a little bit in London this weekend. I interviewed him one-on-one out at their practice on Friday. Gus was very courteous, gave me all the time again that we needed to do that interview. I saw him in his press conference. We had him out at Regent Street. But I just sensed that there was a little bit of, he was feeling some pressure. He was just a tiny bit different than how he normally is. And so even those ones that are given time, they feel the heat, Jeff.
Well, let me just say this to the people out there, the listeners out there, that here's our reality in coaching, is that what we do for a living is judged, rightly or wrongly, it's judged every week. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't have a quarterly report or a yearly report that we have to deal with. We have to deal with it every Sunday. And not only is it's not only constantly every week do you have to perform the, you know, in, you do it in a very, very visible forum, right? Millions of people are watching you, and they're judging your performance, if you will.
Well, yeah, it's not like a normal job, is it, Jeff? You're not being judged just by your boss.
And, you know, you may be, let's say you're a heart surgeon, right? Well, you know, that's important stuff, and you know, wins and losses are measured in lives, and that's probably way more important than what we do. But the reality of it is, there aren't millions of people watching your heart surgery.
Yeah.
Right? So when you screw one up, you know,
yeah,
that's tough luck for the guys you're working on. But you know, there aren't people coming to your door. Now, it's the kind of stuff that happens. There aren't people putting, you know, moving signs or for sale signs in your, you know, in your front lawn,
yeah,
you know, after you lose a game, which is, you know, that's not just a random story. I mean, I could give you a litany of ones of guys I know who, you know, like one time, coach was on a bad streak and it couldn't, you know, it kind of had gone south on him. His team had gone south on it. And the next thing you know, somebody hires a moving van and parks it in front of his house. So, you know, you see coaches, college coach last 2 weeks ago, there he's coaching at a game in front of 80,000 people, and a plane flies over carrying a, you know, with a banner behind it, fire, you know, and I won't use the guy's name, but yeah, firing. So, I mean, that's the fishbowl we live in.
That's when we'll know we've made it, Jeff, when there's a plane flying over Sky Sports on a Sunday afternoon, says fire Reynolds. I'll be a little bit upset, but part of me, a tiny little part of me, would be proud.
Yeah, you know, it's like Al Davis used to say, it's not what they say about you. Do they spell your name right?
Exactly. As long as they're saying something about you, right? Anything else catch your eye from Week 7? Then we'll move on to Week 8.
Yeah, you know, I just, as you look at this thing, it's amazing now as we get into this point in the season where you can really now start to see who the class of the league are. You know, and I really think that, you know, you look at the NFC and you see the Packers and you see Arizona, but neither of them is not without warts. You know,
yeah.
Neither of them is what you would say, well, there's a juggernaut, there's a dynasty. You know, the Patriots, obviously, in the AFC, but, you know, it wasn't without a struggle, you know, beating the Jets and beating the Jets at home. And Todd Bowles and his staff, you know, and team went up there and they gave New England all they can handle. So, but you're starting to see teams start to separate a little bit. The team that surprises me and continues to surprise me is Carolina.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they do it really the old school way. They do it with running the football with Stewart. They do it with great play on defense. I mean, Kuechly and Davis are two of the best linebackers I've ever seen playing together. They're big, physical up front. But they Greg Olsen's a great tight end. Mm. But you look at the rest of it and you just go, how in the world are they winning with Funchess, who's not ready yet? He's going to be a good player, I think, not ready yet. Ted Ginn, who's always been just kind of an enigma, and that's what he's got basically to throw to.
That physical way, Jeff, though, will serve them well if they have to go to Lambeau in the playoffs. If it's cold and
pardon me,
if they have to go up to Lambeau.
The interesting thing when somebody can take Stewart out of the game and take Cam out of the game, take him physically running the football out of the game, is there enough there to win? Mm. Now, as long as they keep playing the kind of defense that they're playing, there is, because they'll keep the scores down. But if they ever get into a game where there's a shootout, that's when I worry about Carolina. But people say, well, look at their schedule. You can only play the schedule that you got, right? That's all you can do. You can't can't change the schedule. And they've played everybody and beat everybody they've played so far. So I just really think that Carolina is an interesting team to me, very, very interesting team. And Atlanta, I kept waiting the first 7 weeks for Atlanta to take a little dip and come back to reality. Well, they get beat, and then what do? They come back the next week and win a tough game, win a grind-it-out kind of game. So they show character. I think Dan Quinn's done a great job there.
Yeah, we've got 5-6-0 teams for the first time in NFL history. So there's no popping of champagne corks in Miami just yet with all those old fellas that were around the first Wembley game this year. We've got New England, Cincinnati, Denver, Green Bay, and Carolina all at 6-0. And Jeff, just mentioning Wembley, I forgot you were in a generous mood a few weeks back. You were promising tickets. We're going to give away a couple of tickets to this weekend's game, aren't we? Detroit and Kansas City at Wembley Stadium.
Detroit and Kansas City, and Jack Humphrey, who's a very loyal listener to this podcast and a great NFL fan, and is going to be my guest at the stadium for two tickets. Jack loves his NFL, and I'm really happy to be able to, with the cooperation of NFL UK and this podcast to welcome Jack to Wembley Stadium next week. And I can't wait to hear what he tells me about his experience seeing the Lions and Kansas City.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be fun. Jack, if you're near me on the sidelines, don't throw anything at me. Someone threw a gummy bear at me, Jeff, on stage on Saturday.
See, but like you say, now you've arrived, man. Do you have an entourage yet? Do you like... Because I really was following the Regent Street stuff, and, it's amazing. When they start chanting your name, Neil, that's when you've made it.
I did say to them, because we throw mini footballs out into the crowd, I did say, you don't throw stuff at me. That's not how it works. I throw it to you. That's how this deal works. Should be another great one this weekend at Wembley Stadium. Hey, Jeff, listen to this on the legend front. We've got Barry Sanders coming to town and the Nigerian nightmare, Christian Okoye.
Awesome. If I think about this one now, you're the Lions, right? You just made these coaching changes. Now you get on a plane and you go to England for this game. This is the perfect, in my opinion, the perfect opportunity for Jim Caldwell to get his season turned around. Mm. These changes, I like, frankly, being on the road, personally, as I would rather play on the road than play at home.
Yeah.
Because I enjoy the travel with the team. When you've got a team on the road, now particularly a game like these International Series games where you come in, the Lions are already in, right?
Yes,
so you're going to be around each other for the week as a football team. And it gives you a chance to really, really get to know one another and spend time with one another and develop the thing that sometimes we minimize that I don't think you ever should minimize, and that's the human factor, the camaraderie, the team chemistry thing. This is a great opportunity for Jim Caldwell to do that with these Lions and, with the staff changes that he's made. A lot of people were surprised that he made those changes prior to the bye week, but I'm not, because, again, you got to look at this environment in the UK together as another week of training camp, because that's really the way you live.
Okay, let's make our picks for week 8 in the NFL then, Jeff. And we start with an intriguing game on Thursday night now. The rejuvenated Miami Dolphins at the New England Patriots. I'm still going to take New England. When you look at the fact that Tom Brady had all that pressure from the Jets. He had his receivers drop 9 passes. He's missing 2 of his top 3 offensive tackles. And he just gets 1 yard rushing from his running backs. And you know what? These Patriots still win. So I think Miami will give him a challenge. The pass rush could be interesting, but I'm going to go New England. What about you?
I think you got to go New England until Miami proves that they can go into this kind of environment and win on the road. And here to me is also the key thing. If you're Dan Campbell's agent and they can somehow win this game,
oh boy,
I am sitting in that owner's office the next day saying, let's talk about a 5-year deal for my guy, right? And I think that this is the litmus test for the experiment. This is the litmus test for room. Like it appears that he's captured the room, and frankly, I'm pulling for him. I'd like to see it happen, but I just think that New England's too good.
All right, both going New England in that one. Patriots are 46-4 at home in their last 50 games in Foxborough. So to London then, 9:30 a.m. kickoff in America, 2:30 kickoff here in London. Detroit at Kansas City. What do you reckon, Jeff? This is two teams that have disappointed this year.
Yeah, but you look at the relative amount of disappointment, and to me, the Lions are one of the most disappointing teams in the league. Really thought that, that Jim Caldwell had come in and cleaned up what had been a team that was, full of penalties, talented, but, shoot itself in the foot all the time, too many penalties, undisciplined play, all of that. And you saw, improvement in Matt Stafford, and then now they've really taken a step back, and I think Kansas City, while I'm not I don't think Kansas City's going to get deep in the playoffs or anything like that. I think Kansas City's a better football team. And so I'm going to go with Kansas City on that one.
All right. I'm going to look for that instant reaction from the Lions on offense with the change with Joe Lombardi out. I'm going to go Detroit to win that one at Wembley Stadium. Be a second successive win at Wembley if that happens for Detroit. Tampa Bay at Atlanta. I'm going to go Atlanta to roll on.
I think Atlanta. I think Tampa Bay's got so many problems on defense. James Winston played better by this past week. He didn't turn the ball over. I think that's important. But he's playing a different kind of defense, and that Dan Quinn defense is aggressive and physical, and they make it tough. They'll make it tough on the young quarterback. So I'm going to take Atlanta.
All right. This is the playing close games never seem to win bowl. San Diego at Baltimore. I tell you what, Philip Rivers is a good quarterback to have in fantasy because they were getting absolutely blown out last week by the Raiders. That scoreline was really deceptive because that San Diego comeback came when the Raiders took their foot off the gas. But Philip Rivers ended up again with close to 400 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. He's had 123 passes, Jeff, in 2 games.
Yeah, and you know what? He's playing against a secondary that's not playing very well.
Yeah,
when he goes up to Baltimore, and that defense has struggled. It's hard for me, Neil, to see, a John Harbaugh coach team. This is a team that, they're perennially a playoff team. They're perennially a Super Bowl challenger. And they're too talented to be playing the way they're playing. They just can't seem to win. They climb back in it. They block the punt. They climb back in it. And then, they turn loose a guy in protection. Flacco has to throw off his back foot, floats a ball, and gets it picked off. When they, those are the plays that this team made in the last 15 years. And they're not making those plays now. I can't bet against them at home. I really would say I just don't believe they're that bad.
That's where I'm going. I don't think it's a tough one to call, but I'm going Baltimore because purely they're at home. Minnesota at Chicago. You're going Baltimore, right, Jeff?
Yep.
All right, Minnesota at Chicago. I think Minnesota wins this one, even though they're on the road. I like what I'm seeing out of the Vikings.
Yeah, and they got a young wide receiver, a fifth-round draft choice that's really, really playing well, and he's kind of got that thing with Teddy Bridgewater. They got that chemistry going, and Zim's got them playing defense. They're tougher than they've ever been. If Adrian Peterson can keep from you know, choking on his chewing tobacco. I think they got a great shot, so I'm going to take Minnesota.
All right, so both going Minnesota in that one. Arizona at Cleveland. So the Browns, they run Denver close at home, but they didn't show up in St. Louis. Lots of sloppy mistakes. I've got to think Arizona win this one, even though it's in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm going to go Arizona. I think, McGowan's hurt a little bit. The Browns just, they show flashes at times, but I really think Arizona's a good football team.
All right, no disrespect to these two teams, but we won't spend a huge amount of time on Tennessee at Houston. Don't know the status of Marcus Mariota at the moment, but I would probably... Oh, crikey. You go first, Jeff.
Well, I think they're two different teams. I think, I think Tennessee can play some defense, right? They've shown that they can. 2 weeks in a row, they play good defense. Now, with Marcus hurt, that's a problem. But the word I'm getting is that he's tested that knee yesterday, and that he's a tough kid. If he can play, he'll play. Mm. So I'm going to take Tennessee, and I'm going to guess that Mariota plays.
All right, I'm going to go Houston with the home field advantage. New York Giants at New Orleans. I think the Saints keep this rolling, Jeff. I think they've turned things around a little bit. They're playing. They've got some of their good young players on defense, so showing up a little bit. Mark Ingram had a decent day, didn't he, running the football against the Colts? I'm going to go New Orleans to beat the Giants because I still think the Giants are inconsistent at best.
Yeah, I agree with that. You can get caught up in the fact that the Giants beat the Cowboys, and that is a huge win. There's no question about it, but it's how they beat the Cowboys. You beat a backup quarterback who's playing his first game. You return a kickoff 100 yards for a touchdown, and, a guy drops a punt with a minute 30 left to go in the game. So I don't think New Orleans is going to make those kinds of mistakes. And I think Rob is, like you say, starting to get that young defense to play. Whether it's the secondary guys or the young edge pass rusher he has, they're starting to play a little bit. And, Breeze is one week better with his shoulder, so I'm going to take New Orleans.
All right. Cincinnati at Pittsburgh will be our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday after we've done Detroit at Kansas City. We don't know Big Ben's status yet. He is inching closer to a return, but I'm going to go Cincinnati to win, even though that's at Heinz Field, so it's a difficult place to go and win, but these Bengals have got it all going on at the moment. I'm going to pick Cincinnati.
Yeah, there's another team that when you talk about surprising teams in this, this year, I thought the Bengals would be a team that would battle for a playoff spot, but they have played extremely well on really in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams. And I think they'll continue that. I just don't think Pittsburgh is as talented overall, although the Pittsburgh defense has kind of woken up in the last month. So I'm going to take Cincinnati in a close game.
All right, both going Cincinnati in that game then. San Francisco at St. Louis. I like the Rams at home. I think they're a tough team. I'm going to pick St. Louis to win that one. What about you?
Yeah, and look at how Jeff Fisher now, when you go back to Jeff Fisher when he was winning a bunch of games at Tennessee, how did he do it? He did it with great defense, and particularly a great defensive line, and he did it with a running back that he could give the ball to 25 or 30 times.
A franchise back, a proper running back.
Yeah, he's got that, equation again. He's got that, blueprint for success. Aaron Donald, my goodness, is he a good player inside. Mm. They've got great guys around him on the defensive line. They can get after the passer. They're aggressive, physical on defense. And, Gurley is special. Really, Gurley is a special player. And he's in the perfect place for him because they run the kind of offense that you should run when you've got a great downhill running back, which is what he is. And, as you look around the league, one of the reasons why he's flourished as a rookie is he's in a system that fits him. DeMarco Murray, on the other hand, watching the Eagles the other night, he looks sometimes completely lost in that flat back, zone read system. It's just a different way of running the football.
433 rushing yards for Gurley in his last three games. So you're both going Rams in that one. The New York Jets at Oakland, lots to like with these Raiders. There's a lot of positivity coming out of Jack Del Rio and the young stars, Derek Carr, Amari Cooper. Oh, it's tough against that defense. Do you know what? I need to catch up a little bit. So you've got to throw the odd curveball in there. I'm going to go Oakland at home to beat the Jets.
Well, you know what? I'm really happy for Jack, and I'm happy for the Raider organization because they are starting to show some signs of life and some signs of, you know, not being that old Jekyll and Hyde team that they've been for, you know, 5 or 10 years now. But I just don't know if they've got enough total talent yet to play with a team like the Jets. I think the Jets are a good football team. They're really good on defense. And, you know, they went up and, like I said, in a tough environment and gave New England all New England wanted. So I'm going to say that the Jets will bounce back this week against the Raiders, who are probably another year or two away from being a legitimate contender.
All right. So that's a different one on with each of us there. Seattle at Dallas. So the Cowboys are at home. We know now they've lost 4 games in a row since losing Tony Romo. They've, you know, we talked about fighting and clawing and scratching and getting to 500 without Romo. It's not happened so far. Seattle, they don't necessarily travel as well as they play at home, but got to favor them in this game, haven't we, Jeff?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the fact that they can run the football and they play physical on defense, I just don't know, you know, again, if the Cowboys have enough weapons. And you know, again, if they can get Dez back, that'll help them. But you know, you got to get the ball to him, too. And that pass rush in Seattle is fearsome. Mike Bennett and those guys, they can get after the quarterback.
Jeff, give us a bit of perspective. So you're both going to Seattle in that one. A bit of perspective from your side of the pond. There used to be a time when the NFL wouldn't go anywhere near the World Series. They wouldn't touch the World Series. They wouldn't have Sunday Night Football when the World Series was going on. Well, the NFL's scheduled Green Bay at Denver. They don't care about the World Series anymore because there's Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, 2 undefeated teams on Sunday Night Football. Should be a cracker.
I think the NFL understands that they are truly the national pastime now. They are far and away the most popular sport in the United States. And I think, you know, that popularity has spilled across the globe. You watch, like, I just was so impressed with the environment in Wembley Stadium during that game as I watched it. And, you know, I have a history with these kind of international games. When I was coaching in 1984, we went over and played in Japan. And in a sold-out Olympic Stadium, and there were 85 or 90,000 people there. But the reality of it was the quietest crowd. It was like there were 15,000 people there because they just didn't have an appreciation for the game. Now you see what goes on at Wembley, and you recognize that those aren't just – that's not one-off curiosity. I'm going to go watch this crazy American game. Those are dyed-in-the-wool, passionate NFL fans now that pack Wembley Stadium every time there's an International Series game. And I think that's reflective of the fact that the game has – obviously here, it's the number one game now. But it's, you know, it's making strides around the globe, too.
I'm going to say that it won't be perfect from the Packers. That defense of Denver's will create a lot of problems for Aaron Rodgers, but this is not Josh McCown that this defense is going up against. This is Aaron Rodgers. If he scores 24 points, I don't know if Peyton Manning and the Broncos, unless they wake up, unless something different happens, can keep pace. I'm going to go for Green Bay to win on the road, Jeff.
I agree with you, and I think the thing that you know, Aaron Rodgers and those guys will get into the mid-20s point-wise. People don't, if you haven't seen the Packers play, one of the things that, as I watch the Packers compared to the Packers teams the last 3 or 4 years, is their defense now is much, much better. It's much, much better attacking the quarterback than it used to be. And while I still think they have some holes in the secondary, I don't know if, you know, Denver's passing attack, frankly, and it's hard to say that when you're talking about Peyton Manning, if their passing attack can exploit it, you know. And, you know, they can get after the passer. Clay Matthews and those guys can rush the passer.
All right. So we're both going Green Bay in that one. Last game, Monday Night Football, Indianapolis at Carolina. I don't trust the Colts at the moment. I just don't. I don't think they're well coached. I don't think they've got what it takes to go into Carolina and win this game. I'm going to pick Carolina in this one. Jeff, before you make your pick, I've got a question from the mailbag from Matt Mundy, who says, with his job on the line, can Chuck Pagano afford to carry on with Andrew Luck. I am hugely biased on this subject, so I'm going to say that I don't think, yes, he's not perfect and he's not playing well. But if you're looking, as the Indianapolis Colts at number 12 as being your main problem, and that changing him out of that lineup is going to solve the problems, then I think you're deluded.
Well, I think if you make that move, you're sealing your fate and you're the fate of your football team, because even though he does throw too many interceptions, and yes, he does fumble the ball too much, and you know, you look at his interception to touchdown ratio is not what it needs to be, his quarterback rating is not what it needs to be. If you can get him back to what he was in his second year, when you know it was 2-1 touchdowns to interceptions, and he wasn't turning the thing over, that's still a good football team. That, you know, again, they've got their holes, they've got their challenges like everybody else, but I think going into Carolina and playing against that defense is going to be a tall, tall order. I think Carolina's going to win the game. I want to see out of Luck that he can let the game come to him a little bit. You understand what I'm saying, Neil? When I say let the game come to him, I think he has a tendency. He's so competitive. He's such a team guy that he wants to make plays that aren't there to make. And in his growth, in his maturation, for him to get to that next level of quarterback, he has to recognize when it's time to just let a bad play be a bad play and not make it a horrible play.
Yeah, to me, Jeff, that would be a huge leap for him, because at the moment, knowing him, that's not in his nature. He wants to put it all on his shoulders, and sometimes, you know, you can't do that. I mean, I think what you're saying is right. You know, he's fumbling, he's turning it over, he's rushing decisions. Where does that all come from? Yes, a lot of that is from him, but that has to be some of that's on that offensive line. I said this on Sky Sports on Sunday night. I said, you show me a struggling quarterback and I'll show you a bad offensive line. That's the way it is around the NFL.
Well, I think one of the things, there's some parallels to Peyton in early in his career, where, you know, he threw an awful lot of interceptions.
Yeah.
And it took time for him to understand. You know, and he had a guy in Tom Moore who was an offensive coordinator, was an old school guy, and Tom really got him to do exactly what we're talking about, let the game come to him and understand that he didn't have to force every ball in there, that there were other guys on the football team that he could rely on. And with Andrew Luck, it's not, in my opinion, and you know him much better than I do, but in my opinion, it's not a selfishness issue. It's not an arrogance issue. It's just that he wants to win so bad, and he's such a competitor that sometimes that overrides his better judgment as a football player.
Jeff, I think if he was more selfish, he'd have better stats. Because I think if he
that's probably, that may be true, right? I think he doesn't care about interceptions. But what he's got to learn, and this is a growth that they all have to go through, he has to learn is that you got to care about interceptions, because you can't turn the ball over in the National Football League. It's one of the things that will get you beat faster than anything if you turn the thing over.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a quick question from the mailbag. We took that one from Matt Mundy. One from Kurt Smith, who says, can the Jags make a playoff run? Well, they're one game out of first place now, Jeff, in that AFC South.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you look at it and
so
say,
Houston.
It seems bizarre to say that, but that's, you know, just the reality of the division that they're playing in, and you know, there's nothing that's impossible, you know, and I think the biggest thing for Jacksonville is that as Bortles continues to grow, and I go back to that last drive again, those are defining moments, or can be defining moments in a young quarterback's career, because now he can say they've done that. Now Gus can talk to his football team, hey, we've been here before. We've done this, right? That's what winning organizations have that ability to do. The Patriots have been through so many scenarios that there's almost nothing that they can't say at halftime where Belichick can't talk to his football team. Hey, man, we've been down 10 before. You know, we've been up 10 before. We've been through all of this, right? We know what it takes to close out games. We know what it takes to come from behind and win a game. As Gus and his team play together more and more, they're going to have more and more ability to do that. And I think that's important in the growth of their football team. And it's going to come in little chunks of success will be the building blocks for the future for them. And, I credit the organization for having the patience to go about it this way.
Absolutely. One more, Jeff. Jonathan Justin, it's along the playoff theme as well, says, which team will come from out of the wilderness, make a late run, and end up in the playoffs? I mean, at the moment, I would be looking at somebody like the Miami Dolphins, but they've only beaten Tennessee and Houston. Let's see it be done for 6 or 7 weeks. We're not at that stage yet, Jeff, where you kind of make that burst to the playoffs, is it? Sometimes Carolina, it came at the end of November. I mean, there's still a team somewhere hiding in the pack that could emerge and be a real contender.
Yeah, and I think there's so many factors that are going to go into this. Injuries, you know, where, for example, you remember Arizona last year.
Yes.
At this point, Arizona was riding high, and then all of a sudden they lose Carson, and they were struggling just to make the playoffs at the end of the season. So, you know, nobody should, you know, have no hope at this point. I think there's some teams with little hope. Baltimore's got little hope. Detroit's got little hope. But there are very few teams with no hope at this point, because there's still an awful lot of football that's got to get played.
All right, Jeff, let's end it there. It's great stuff today, Jeff. Do this for like 3 hours.
Now, you're back to back now. What are you going to do this week? Give me the game plan for this week.
So this week, in the office today to record this, tomorrow, Lions. See, I don't have to go to every practice necessarily, but I like to. I just want to. So I'm at the Lions tomorrow. I'm going to be at the Lions on Thursday. I'm going to the Chiefs practice on Friday. Saturday, we're doing a big 2-hour fan forum with the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, Barry Sanders, Christian Okoye, Will Shields, formerly of the Chiefs, Lomas Brown. Will Shields, yeah?
Awesome guy.
Yeah, so we're doing all of that, and then then I'll be hosting the tailgate party, Sky Sports stuff. It's a great time to be a fan in the NFL here in the UK at the moment. So lots going on.
Awesome. Keep me posted, man. I watch you very closely on TV and on the internet. And again, I'm so excited to get over. I can't wait, man. We're less than a month away.
We are counting down the days till the Jeff Reinbold arrival. I'm going to tick another day off today on my calendar. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. He was on top form today, bringing us all the insight. Say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.